Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Dear friends, each of us is an astral traveler. We leave our bodies during sleep. Many nights, maybe most nights, we meet with our spirit guides, with our loved ones. We even take classes reportedly. We have a lot of fun when our bodies sleep because our minds, of course, never need to sleep. And even a few of us develop the ability to be fully awake during our astral journeys. And what they see beyond this material level of reality is beyond belief wonderful. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. Our guest today, and I've been so eager to talk with him, is the extraordinary Jürgen Ziva. He is the interdimensional man. Jürgen is the greatest living astral traveler. And wonderfully, by no coincidence, he's also a fantastic artist, so he can show us what he's seen. What he has to tell us, what he has to show us is beyond belief wonderful. Welcome, Jürgen. I'm thrilled to have you here.
Hi, Roberta. It's nice to be here.
Jürgen comes to us all the way from Great Britain, which is fun, the fact that we can talk freely all over the world, but it makes for scheduling that's a little complicated. However, now that we're together, we're going to spend the better part of an hour trying to better understand what Jürgen has been able to do and what he has seen. First, could you please just tell me a little bit about how you got into this, Jürgen? I mean, what made you start? Was it a natural thing that you found yourself able to travel while you were awake?
Well, first of all, when I started off, which was my first experience was in 1975, I didn't believe in any of these sort of types of phenomena at all.
Of course not. Right. But isn't it funny how reality has a way of convincing you of these things?
Yes, it's true. I mean, what happened was I did practice meditation a lot, you know, and I wanted to find out sort of who I was, what reality is all about. But then one day, it happened very spontaneously. My wife and I lived in a town called Bielefeld in Germany, and then suddenly I found myself in front of my parents' house, totally wide awake, and I was totally confused because I had no idea how I got there.
Well, how far away was that?
That was about 80 miles away.
Oh, yeah. Hard to do that in a minute, isn't it?
Yes. And the funny thing was it nearly freaked me out because I couldn't explain it. That was the first thing. And then the other thing was I had 360-degree vision.
Yes.
And then the next thing was at first I didn't have a body. And it was only when I looked down that I suddenly saw that I had something like a body. And this experience lasted a few minutes. While I was totally confused, I also looked around and I identified with absolute clarity the house of my parents. I looked at the tree, how it had grown, and I looked at every detail of it. And then my sort of panic set back in, and
yes.
I thought, did I get here? You know, and my first thought was how do I get? Do I take a bus or you know?
Right.
And at that moment, I suddenly fell back into my body without any break of consciousness. And then I told my wife, and she said, I'll go back to sleep. You were dreaming and so on. But it was certainly not a dream. I was super awake, super aware. And the next morning, the first thing I did was go to the library. I thought I had some sort of brain seizure or something. I had
wow.
no idea what has happened. And then I went through the library, looked under medical conditions and psychology and parapsychology. I finally found something in parapsychology which had this the heading doppelganger. And it was then that I became interested in it.
Doppelganger? That's what they said you were then?
Yes, I mean, I didn't know exactly what had taken place. It was only when I became more interested and I found a book by Carlos Castaneda where he talked about a separate reality, and then I thought, yes, it must have been what I have experienced.
Wow.
It was only when I came to England, which was a year later, that I found books by Muldoon and Carrington Muldoon, I think, and Oliver Fox. There were very few books around, and then I finally found out what had happened. And then I started, which was about 6 months later, I started sort of experimenting. And that is when it really started. I became quite deeply involved in it.
At what point did you find yourself leaving this plane? And, I mean, how long did it take you to get to the point where you could travel outside of this level of reality?
Well, the first thing is, I didn't know really where I was. The first thing the very first experiences were that I found myself out of my body in the bedroom, and then I was at the opposite end of my bedroom, and I saw my body lying in bed. And then I went around my body. I was actually lying behind it, looking at my hair from the back. And then I tried to slip back into it, and I found it didn't fit. I was sort of paralyzed. And spontaneously, I clicked back into my body. And that was the first experiences. And then later, much later, I found that the bedroom didn't look like the bedroom. There were things missing. There were other details. And this I found very confusing initially. And I said, hang on, what's taking place here?
Right.
And then I later found out it's when we astral travel, we don't actually go into the physical level. We do initially when we still attach to the physical double, which is known as the etheric double, then we still retain the physical senses, which allow us to perceive the physical world. But once we get more better at astral traveling, we almost instantly go into the astral body, and by default, we leave the physical dimension behind, okay? And so what we see is only a copy of the physical world, not the actual thing.
So when you were in your bedroom, just to clarify,
yeah,
you were not actually in that bedroom. You were in an astral copy of that bedroom.
That's right, yes. And that's
interesting.
This has been reported over and over again by people. They are confused that they don't see their bedroom, or that they don't even find their body lying there, because what has taken place, they actually went from the physical level straight into the astral level, which was a copy of their physical bedroom, you know. So you will find there are changes. For example, you may find there's suddenly a wallpaper on the wall, or the pictures have changed.
Wow.
It's quite confusing. Sometimes the changes are very subtle and very minute, but other times they can be dramatic. For example, you look out of the window, and instead of being on the ground floor, you discover your bedroom has moved to the first floor. And all these things can only be explained that you have actually left the physical dimension and went into a counterpart of the physical dimension, which has been created taking all sorts of other things into account, like what people imagine, you know, and all sorts of different other factors.
Well, could we just pause for a moment so I can orient people? Because many of our listeners are not as familiar as we are with what reality really is. Now, we know, everyone, that there are at least 7 major levels, probably infinite sublevels of reality beyond this material plane. This is the only one that's material, but the others appear to be as material and solid as this one. They all exist in the same place because they're all energy. And by going to just raising our spiritual energy by a bit, if we have the ability to do that, we can go to a dimension of reality which is not material. Now, that's
right.
About 90%, we guess, of reality. This may be 5 to 10%, where we are, where we're sitting today, maybe 5 to 10% of reality. Most of it is not material. So when someone like Jürgen, or if you decide to learn to do it, travels astrally, they're going into what's most of reality, and where there's infinite places, because it's so much bigger than here. And in some of those places, we find our afterlife. Again, all in the same place, all purely based in energy. And so what Jürgen is about to take us on is a journey outside this level of reality, but right in the same place. So is that right, Jürgen? Is that a summary that you could endorse, or would you change it?
Yes, no, I think that that's about right, really. But I have to say, it's not quite as straightforward, because there's also the aspect that you travel, okay? Mm-hmm. And this is when it becomes very confusing. For example, initially, I mean, after these things happened to me, I started reading books on astral travel and the astral world and so on. And I found that people divided the astral world into seven levels, okay? Uh-huh. And that I quickly found out, I had an out-of-body experience. I met a few people, astral people, who were not, had no physical bodies. They were basically dead people. I talked to them, and I spent a lot of time actually interviewing people and just and talking to them. And one time I asked them quite innocently, could they please tell me what level I am
on? What floor am I on here? Yes.
And they looked at me as if I was mad. And they didn't understand what I was talking about. And then I later found out that when we describe things as different levels and put numbers to it, that's just an arbitrary way of trying to illustrate something.
Yes. You're totally right, Jürgen. I can just confirm that because of the fact that now I have a friend on the sixth level. He last incarnated in the 1600s, came back, took a 20-year life so he could teach through the veil, and he was very confused when he first saw George Meek's diagram of the seven levels. Mm-hmm. It confused him a lot because he can go anywhere. He's a sixth level being, and he just thinks and he's there. It never had occurred. You're absolutely right. They don't experience levels. What we do is talk about levels, though, as a way to help people understand that the higher your spiritual vibratory rate, the more you can experience in the afterlife. But you're right. And so we've just had another confirmation of my friend Mikey Morgan, whose book comes out this fall and is called Flying High in Spirit. Okay, sorry, little plug. Now, you said this to them. You said, well, what floor are we on? And they said, what?
That's right. Yeah. So I thought, well, maybe I was wrong. You know, maybe there are no levels. And of course, that's absolutely true. The experience is, it depends what your feeling is like, you know, what conscious level you are in.
Yes.
That determines the level of reality you find yourself in.
Yes.
For example, you can find yourself in a quite a negative level, you know, where the light is darker, where the energy is not quite as powerful, where you can't even fly, you know, because the energy is so low.
Yes.
And then on higher levels, when you are feeling good and feeling positive, you zoom across the sky like an eagle, you know, and your energy is brilliant, and you're feeling good and positive. It's exactly what we feel in real life, except for every emotion, there's a corresponding reality level, a physical reality which reflects our feelings.
Yes. You know? Yeah, you know, that's a very a different way to express it, but I think an excellent way to express it. For some people who are presently on Earth, if they are very negative in their lives, in their thoughts, the worry is they won't be able to experience this wonderful sort of upper levels where you soar, where you're happy, where everything is beautiful, but instead be on the lowest levels. I want to just interject that in September, I presented at a conference in Scottsdale, and at that conference, my wonderful friend, Wendy Zammit. Again, victorzammit.com. Subscribe to their newsletter. Best news you'll read all week, and it's free. But Wendy Zammit had done a PowerPoint which featured, Jürgen, some of your wonderful drawings, beautiful art. But the drawing you did of the lowest astral level was awful. It was so dark you could barely see the despondent beings lying around there. And that's what it's really like in these in the lowest level?
Yes. I mean, what happened recently, I've written a new book since that came out, which is called Vistas of Infinity and How to Enjoy Life When You're Dead, basically.
Enjoy life when you're dead. I love that.
So what I've done is, in the last sort of 7 years, I had out-of-body experience where I took a different take on it. I didn't actually deliberately project myself. I just waited to see where consciousness was going to send me. And one thing which I noticed was when I allowed this sort of process to take place, that consciousness would send me to a level which always had a sort of teaching element to it.
Yes.
And the fact was that I wasn't actually in any way affected by the levels I went to, you know. So I maintained my serenity, if you like, but I was able to visit these places and see what was taking place. And in the new book, I go into great detail in what sort of things I have encountered there. And I found that the people who lived on this level, they just had a very negative attitude.
Yes. You know?
And they were sort of trapped in their own fixations, in their own belief systems, you know. That doesn't mean that that was a permanent state. It could have just been a state which could have been only lasting hours or so. But in some cases, it was a much longer time, you know. In one of the examples, I described meeting a lady who, when I first saw her, she looked like a zombie. She was had a diseased skin and looked really hideous. And I only recognized her by having sort of my clairvoyant vision, if you like. And I could instantly see that she was a prostitute, that she died of a heroin overdose, and that she died under very, very awful circumstances. And as I was talking to her, I was informing her that she had died because she thought she was trapped in a nightmare. And I was telling her that she had died, and gradually I was sending her my love and my goodwill, and gradually her skin sort of became clear. And I felt, and this took only a short time, I felt this sort of wave of energy, you know, being flowing towards her, and we then started to walk, and the time of it became, from nighttime it became morning, it became brighter, and her skin cleared up and her appearance became much more normal, you know.
Yes.
And by the time we reached a park, it was sort of daytime, the atmosphere around us was much better, and she had to return to her normal self. And that didn't take longer than just maybe 10, 15 minutes of our time.
Wow. You know?
And this also showed to me that there are no demarcated levels. The consciousness can go through a gradual process, you know, from a lower level to a higher level.
Right. Yeah, that's wonderful. I should just interject that lowest level Jesus talks about in the Gospels. He calls it the outer darkness, where there will be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And that's so I've all the descriptions of it are kind of awful, that it's, you know, smelly, dark, all the negative things. So once again, we find that the Gospels are validating the afterlife evidence we're gathering, and the afterlife evidence is validating the Gospels, as I said it last week in talking about my new book, Liberating Jesus. But another thing which I think is kind of important is to remember that even though this is what some call the punishment level, the only people who put us there, as Jürgen just has said, is ourselves. If we are trapped in ourselves, in negative feelings about ourselves or about anyone else, we can put ourselves there. And that's a terrible, or if we can't forgive ourselves, that seems to be a big way that we can put ourselves there. I have a question, Jürgen. We know that if people are strict about a religion, it doesn't matter which one it is, There are levels of the afterlife, and I have no idea where these are, but there are areas made by their co-religionists to which they are attracted after they die. Do you think those are, because you were talking about people trapped in beliefs, are those lower level kind of negative areas too?
Well, people create the environment they they imagine or they are attached to, because there's not a way they can be anywhere else because that's what they draw towards them.
Right.
And that applies to any sort of belief or any fixation we are on. We feel drawn to these sort of environments and we are drawing the people who have similar sort of beliefs into this environment, and we are reinforcing it by doing so. So it can be that we are more trapped in these levels than we would be on Earth, where we mix with other people who have got a different outlook on life. So it actually perpetuates much stronger than it would be on Earth, because these environments only attract like-minded people, But I haven't had any of these sort of fixations, but I did observe how people's fixations determined their environment. I found, a woman, she was trapped in a cell, in a white concrete cell, which had no doors and windows. And I said, you don't have to be there. Because I came in, you can get out to it. And I immediately understood that she was trapped by her own belief that she was in a situation which she believed she couldn't find a way out of it.
Oh, wow.
And so consciousness built these walls around, literally built her, incarcerated her in her beliefs. These things don't have to last. They can just be temporary prisons. But we have to remember what we find when we die is basically what we see, what we are on the inside. Our inside world, our subconscious world, becomes our external reality. But the thing is, it becomes just as real as our physical reality is now, and there's no, it's not less real. If anything, it's sort of even more real. Because
that's what they tell us. What a beautiful point that is. Mm. Where we arrive after death is where our interior self, where our thoughts are who we are, is made manifest by our own mind. What a beautiful way to put it. Thank you.
That's it. The body is gone, and then we are only left with what our mind is, what's inside, and that becomes our manifest external reality. And the better we are in sort of controlling it or living with it or being in harmony with it, the more freedom we have to change our environment. Yeah.
This is such an important point. I want to make sure we emphasize it. The dead tell us over and over now, this great, great astral traveler, Jürgen Ziba, has just confirmed it. Who you are on the inside when you die is where you're going to live after death. When I first understood this, I immediately cleaned up my act. No more violent entertainments. No thought that I wouldn't want to see on a billboard in Madison Square Garden or in Times Square with my name on it. Mm. Nothing inside that I wouldn't like to see manifested outside. And you can live like that. You just have to change your habits. It makes you a much better person, but it also makes it so that you can have fun after you die. You're not going to be trapped in a concrete cell of your own making.
Yes. I mean, of course, you immediately enhance the quality of your life. When you start living like this now, of course, you immediately enhance the quality of your life now. And naturally, when you die, your freedom sort of is enhanced, and your possibilities are enhanced.
That's beautiful. That is just beautiful. I'm just going to pause for a second and remind us of who Jürgen where we are, and then when we come back, we're going to hear from Jürgen what it's like in the happier places. This is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books, now in print, are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, The Fun of Staying in Touch About Communication After Death, and my brand new book, Liberating Jesus. You can learn more about all my books and also find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest today is Jürgen Ziva, the interdimensional man. This is someone who is an idol to a lot of us because he is doing something I'm scared to do. I could never attempt it, Jürgen. But his gift of astral travel and also being able to do these gloriously beautiful pictures of where he's been is really a wonderful gift to us all. Now, Jürgen, it gets better. Tell us what it's like a little bit higher in terms of spiritual vibration and internal psychological makeup. What's it like in the better areas of the afterlife?
Okay, first of all, I would say that everything that we experience here also exists on the next levels, on the other levels. But there are many, many more dimensions where everything is much more glorious and much more beautiful, And the way to experience these is if you start sort of living via the heart, when you start sort of living in a place of peace and love that elevates your feeling, and the corresponding environment will then be much more elevated, much more luminous. So your inner light is then manifested in the outside world, and you enter into dimensions which are simply quite unimaginable to what we see here. Sometimes I'm just astounded, and I've been in my latest book and the previous one, I've been describing, I was trying to describe the cities or the towns and the recreational aspect of it and the incredible landscapes and the different worlds there are. It's just something which is beyond what we can imagine, because when we live, even when we live here and are on a nice sunny beach or so on, there's always something that detracts from it and makes us aware that we are living in a body, But the one thing I would say is how we determine the better levels is by a feeling that feels like getting closer to home.
Yes.
And sometimes I find the best way to determine which level of consciousness we are on is a feeling how close we feel to our home. And when we go to the very higher levels where we don't even have any more an astral body, we feel like we have come home. The outside world, there's no longer an outside world which is different to us or which we feel separated from. Everywhere we look, we are within ourselves. We are at home. There's no otherness. There are no enemies, and the people who live there, they are like brothers and sisters. We are closely related to them.
That's beautiful. You keep saying these things that are beautiful that I want to comment on. One of the things we've come to understand is that there's no separation between us and God. Your mind is part of eternal mind, and there's no separation between you and everybody else. Every person you see on the street, everybody you love, everybody you hate, we're all part of the same being. So this feeling of approaching home as we become more and more loving and more and more in the internal self we are becomes more and more ideal, the closer we do come to our true home, which is source. So that is just beautiful, Jürgen.
Yes, so that's it. I mean, there's no alienation anymore. Everywhere we go is a familiar ground. We are always on home territory, and this sort of feeling sort of expands until we enter the, what I called in my last book, the heaven states.
The highest level closest to the source is what Jesus called the kingdom of heaven. It's when he says you can't do this and enter the kingdom of heaven, he's not saying you're going to go to hell therefore. What he's saying is you've got work to continue to do, and you progress in the afterlife, and you do more lives on earth until gradually you're not incarnating anymore. You're in the kingdom of heaven. Eventually, when you're perfect, you will be able to enter the kingdom of God, which is the source level. But I just want to touch too on something you mentioned, because we now have Mikey Morgan communicating with us from the sixth level, and having just been in a body, he knows how to talk to us. We've learned even more than ever I have seen in the past from other communicators, that the middle levels are not just beautiful, but they're fun. You can do, because our bodies can't get hurt, we feel young, we look young, and we've got plenty of energy, we never have to sleep or eat. There's a lot of play. Yes, we're working hard at helping others and doing things to grow spiritually, but there's a lot of play. Mikey, whose new book, Flying High in Spirit, is just wonderful. Mikey talks about the fact that you learned to snowboard here because he came back and was a kid for a while. And so the mountains in the middle level are much better than any mountain he ever saw here. And he said there are two things that are especially good about it. First, it's not cold, although the snow feels cold because we remember it as cold. And he says, no matter what you do, you can't get hurt. So he says he's now as good at snowboarding as Shaun White. He's very excited to show his friends. It's going to be a while, though, because all his friends when he was here are still young. But that's typical. There are whatever you enjoy doing on the earth, if you can just, as Jürgen says, develop on the inside the kind of environment you're going to be wanting in the afterlife to manifest around you, whatever you enjoy doing here, you can do there, and it'll be much better, just as Mikey says.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, that's right. The thing is, I normally, when I have an out-of-body experience, I find the first thing I do is not actually going out and enjoying it in the traditional sense. I very often try to meditate, carry on with my meditation, because it's a very good way actually to raise your consciousness and get into much better levels, you know, or expand your consciousness and your awareness, you know. So I stopped in a way, unless I'm being sent to certain places. The first thing I do when I have an out of body experience is to meditate. You know.
So you're meditating out of body, is that what you're saying?
Yes, I meditate out of body. And the reason that is so powerful, it's because you don't have to overcome the so-called gravity of your physical senses and everything.
Right.
You're already liberated from your physical body. It's a bit like launching a record from space rather than from Earth, where it doesn't have to overcome the gravity.
Ah, that makes sense.
So that's a... I would like to say that to people who do practice astral travel, to not necessarily sort of go out and fly and enjoy yourself. Of course, you can do that, but you can make much better use of it by expanding your consciousness, you know, expanding who you are and getting to know the deeper levels of who you are, you know.
Jürgen, there are some people listening who are saying, I want to learn to do that. What he's doing, I want to learn to do. What advice would you have for someone who has never thought that they could do this, and maybe now as they hear you, they're saying, I want to try? What would be your advice to them on how to get started?
Well, first of all, I mean, as you said initially, we all do astral travel, you know, when we go to sleep. The only difference is we are not aware of it because we are in a dream, you know.
Yes.
So I think that the first stage would be become aware in the dream. I mean, nature has given us a dream as a natural gateway into the afterlife, if you like, or the non-physical life, you know. The only thing we need to do is become aware in our dreams. That's the first step, I would say, you know. And then after we become aware...
How would we do that? Because I would have no clue on how to do that.
No, I think it's probably a little bit... I'll just explain the process. We have to become more aware that we are dreaming, and in order to do that, we need to be uh, we, when we wake up from a dream, we should write it down. Okay, write our dream down, have a pad beside our bed, and then go back into our dream and do that sort of for several weeks. Then, first of all, our dream recall becomes better, but also we become more aware of recognizing our dreams. You know, and then the next stage takes place, and there are a lot of books written about it. One of my favorite books is written by the psychologist Robert Wagner. It's called Lucid Dreams: Gateway to Your Inner Self. He's
wow.
a real
okay.
expert.
Please say that again. What is his name exactly?
Robert Wagner.
Okay.
And his book is Lucid Dreams: Gateway to Your Inner Self.
Okay, great. Okay. I have no idea. In fact, I think it's just not my voyage to be an adventurer as you are. But what I've heard from some folks is that if you go to sleep with an intention of remembering your dreams and do that every night, you do begin not
yes.
just to remember the dreams, but then to become more aware inside the dream, so you can almost direct the dream. So it can be a gradual process too.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the main thing is that we become more conscious that we are dreaming, more aware of our dreams, and then our dream life becomes a little bit more active, or we remember more of it.
Yes.
And then we may come across a situation where we suddenly having a dream, and then suddenly say to ourselves, "Oh, I think I'm dreaming." You know, and when this takes place, this is a moment we have to grab it and start saying, okay, this is a dream. Now I can do whatever I like doing.
Right.
You know, and then, now that's not necessarily astral traveling, because all we have done so far is become aware that we are dreaming. And what the lucid dreamers say, the lucid dream is still a subjective thing. We are living the content of our own subconscious like a normal dream. We are not necessarily on the astral level. And what I have found is in order to take it to a step further, is by dispersing the dream or breaking the dream narrative. And in order to do that, what I usually do is I look on the ground in front of me, or I look on my hands. Okay, for a few seconds, and that will actually displace or disintegrate the dream.
So you're in the dream, and
yes.
you inside the dream, you look down at the ground,
yes.
or you look at your hands. Oh, how
yeah.
interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so then, for example, the first thing we notice, if there were dream characters in my dream, they suddenly vanish, or they disappear. You know, and suddenly I become aware of a completely new environment. Or it can be that certain aspects in my dream disappear while the environment still remains. You know, so we have actually projected our inner dream into an astral environment where it sort of is acted out.
So that puts you into an astral environment. To do that, you
yes.
wake up in the dream and you're in the astral.
Yes, and once you have...
Wow, that's wonderful. Thank you. I'm sorry, I get excited. That's
yes,
great.
I mean, anybody can do it with a bit of practice, because that's the reality we live in, you
yes.
know. So once we break the dream narrative, and I always look at the ground until I can see every grain of sand and every blade of grass or wherever I am, until it becomes really sharp. In that moment, anything that has come from the fantasy level disappears. And then I'm on the astral level, on the non-physical level.
Wow.
And then I can look around, and then I meet the real astral people. In a lot of cases, I call out for people like my mother, you know, my brother. I can talk to them. They can show me around. With my mother, I have a rapport even better than I had when she was still alive, you know, because we're connecting on a much deeper inner level. But
yes.
I can physically see her. I can hug her. You know, I can feel her. I can... we can talk for any length of time, and she not only talks to me, but she sends me the mental images, and the communication is absolutely total.
Let's stop and think about that for a moment. You are able, once you are in this astral level and you've been able to enter it through a process of first learning to be awake inside your dream and then focusing on it, focusing on the ground or on your hands until you make anything that's not real go away, and there you are in the astral. Do you then just say, "Hi, Mom, I'm here"?
Yes, I mean, sometimes, I can actually call her, you know, and if it's my mother, of course, mothers are so very susceptible to their children. So she almost instantly pops up when I want her. Sometimes she sort of lingers around when I'm engaged in some sort of other activity, you know, and she doesn't sort of intrude. But very often I almost immediately sort of get together with her and then we chat or, you know, that doesn't happen every time, but it happened a fair number of times. And so you get to know what the person is up to. And one of the interesting things was that I saw my mother different nearly every time. Her outer appearance has changed, you know.
In what way? I mean, she looked younger or older, or she had different hairstyles?
Well, sometimes she looks as if she had a total makeover. One time I found her, she was like a teenager, you know.
having a great experience being a teenager again, I'm sure.
It's absolutely amazing. But the thing which you never change is the aura of the person. So I immediately recognize her. She may have totally changed her appearance, but I still immediately recognize the atmosphere, the aura of her, you know, how she is, her personality, that is still totally maintained, you know. And then, of course, what I always do when I meet her, we have got this hug. And I know the hug, you know, is exactly how I remember it when I was a child, you know, and when my mother was still alive. But her appearance, every time I see her, she looks different and she experiments with it, you know. It's a bit like people on the physical level who have sort of makeovers, you know.
Okay, people are saying, what? Well, when we are when we have an astral body, and that's the body we're living in, after we've lost our physical body, the body we have there is basically constructed by our mind. Most people choose to look and feel as they did when they were quite young, although not quite that young, but they typically choose somewhere in their 20s to early 30s as when they think they looked and felt best, and yes, that's how they present themselves. Yes. Isn't that wonderful?
Yes, it's a very dynamic body, actually, the astral body, you know. And there are things which you can experience on the astral level which are simply mind-blowing when you see or observe how people can quickly change their appearance, you know. And I illustrated it in my last book quite a lot, how our ability to change our appearance, you know, and stuff like that. So it's a rather very interesting thing. I mean, I could write a whole book in itself about, you know, the social aspect of astral living, you know, how people interact, what they do, and so on. There are whole societies which are different to our societies, you know, whole communities who are doing their own thing, and it is absolutely fascinating.
You know, one of the things that the dead tell us is that it's very culturally dependent. Mm. So that, for example, if you were to die in another part of the world from what you're used to having, where you're used to being, you could very well end up initially in their afterlife. If you die in China, you might find yourself in a beautiful garden surrounded by pagodas, for example. And then you just call out in your mind to your loved ones, they come and get you, and they take you to wherever you really would prefer to be because it looks familiar. That's what the dead tell us. I don't know how you would experience that, but that's how they tell us.
Yes, I think that's right. I mean, I've actually traveled to other cultures when I was out of my body. I've been to East Asia, the equivalent or the astral counterpart of East Asia, where I was in a beautiful South Sea environment with thousands of little islands, with beautiful habitats on each island. And I absolutely enjoyed being there, you know.
I'm sure. Wow.
That's so wonderful. You get people, actually, once they go over, they go out traveling. And that can, you know, there are literally no limits to where you can travel. If you're an adventurous soul, you can spend probably an eternity just traveling around and gathering information and impressions, and it's absolutely mind-boggling, really.
There actually are some dead people who do that, my mother being one. She traveled during the whole latter part of her life. She celebrated her 80th birthday by going to the only continent on which she never had been, which was Antarctica. After that, she kind of got slowed down, but that hasn't changed. The last time I communicated with her through Suzanne Wilson, who was a terrific medium, she said she was traveling like mad. Her passport had a lot of stamps before, but it was nothing like what she had now because she was going everywhere. So if traveling is your thing, yes. As you say, the reality there is so much more sort of varied and so much more just huge that... contrary to what many people think, which is that we must be really crowded, think how many people have lived, all of that, it's very, very much bigger there. And it's not only is it not crowded, but if you want to be alone, you can be alone too. It's beautiful in every respect.
I have to make a qualification there. You just mentioned crowding, and I discovered that the lower dimensional levels, which are the sort of closest equivalent to the physical Earth, the towns and the places, some of them are really quite crowded.
I'm not surprised. Let's talk about why that would be true. As you said, those people have manifested a reality which is Earth-like.
Yes.
To including the crowding. It's a voluntary thing. It's in their minds. That's what they expect and believe, right?
Yes. It's also the fact that they are, first of all, conditioned with the impressions of the Earth environment, and they don't conceive there's anything other than that. You know,
yes.
The other very important factor is that these people have no concept of an afterlife. If you think about that, most people, I think it's over 50% of the people, have no idea whether there is an afterlife. And if they think about it, many people think in terms of, well, we probably are ghost-like shapes or
putting
bubbles,
right,
or something. There's no understanding of what an afterlife could be like. So they just stumble across the borders into the next level of reality. Some of them don't even realize that they have died.
Yes.
Because everything is just as real as it is here. It feels hard, it feels solid. There are buses, there are taxis, there are bars, there are pubs. And I would say one of the reasons why I wanted to write this book is actually, I don't know whether it will actually spread far enough, but to make people realize that they're limiting themselves by not considering the greater aspect of their own self, you know, of their own lives, and a large number of people actually crowding on the lower dimensional levels and find no way out of it because they just don't know any better.
Jürgen, let's have people, everyone get your pencil. Tell people what your website is and what the names are of your books.
Yes, my website is multidimensionalman.com. Okay, and the latest book I've written is called Vistas of Infinity. That has just come out a couple of months ago. Vistas of Infinity, How to Enjoy Life When You Are Dead, basically. The idea was to write some sort of guide to prepare people to do everything they can possibly do now in order to make sure that when they enter the next stage of their infinite future, that they have a smooth transition, a beautiful life ahead of them, you know, which means they have to deal, of course, with their issues, with their fixations, you know, with their belief issues and all sorts of things, and start to also consider living more altruistically, more from the heart.
Learn to love, yes. Jürgen, I've always known I really wanted to meet you, and it's wonderful to meet you now. But you and I have exactly the same goal. I'm trying from a different direction to get people's attention and help them do exactly what you're trying to help them do, which is to open themselves to the fact that our minds are eternal, never began, never will end. And what we have on the inside is what we will manifest on the outside, a little bit maybe here, but certainly in eternity.
Yes, Yes.
So thank you for your work. I think this is because some people will be attracted to the way you're doing it, not so much to what I do. And I'm just thrilled to be able to tell people about you and what you do. So again, multidimensionalman.com, right?
Yes, yes.
And this is the start, I think, for some people of a whole new understanding. Maybe they've been listening to me and, you know, they're not sure the research kind of approach works. Here's someone who actually has been there, has come back, can show you your future, and can talk about it in ways that are not religious, that are not related to anything other than what I think makes intuitive sense to most of us. If your mind is part of the eternal mind that brings forth reality continuously, your mind is going to create your reality. And Jürgen Ziva is able to help you know how to do that and how to make the greatest possible eternal reality for yourself. So I think I'm so thrilled. I'm so sorry we've come to the end of our time, but I'm thrilled to have had you here. And I'm going to hope that we can have conversations like this again, Jürgen. This has been wonderful.
Sure, yes. Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, Roberta.
For everyone, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you fully understand everything that means, including listening to wonderful people like Jürgen Ziva, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available at webtalkradio.net and also on iTunes. Just search anywhere for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Liberating Jesus. And I'm thrilled and honored to have co-written Flying High in Spirit, which is the autobiography of Mikey Morgan. He died at 20 in 2007, and then let his poor, confused mother know that he's actually a sixth-level being who just wanted to be able to teach us through the veil. His book, Flying High in Spirit, is going to be out this week, if it's not already out. You'll find details about all my books, plus my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week is Maxine Milieu. She is a Harvard scholar, and she's doing amazing research in the area of mediumship. Her book, Great Moments of Modern Mediumship, Volume 1, is thick enough to prop open the biggest door, but it had me glued to my chair, so I hope you'll join us next week. This week, our guest has been Jürgen Ziva. He's the multidimensional man, and if what he talks about interests you or excites you, if you respond to it, please remember that you yourself are also an astral traveler. You just don't remember your forays out of body yet. Perhaps you too can learn to astral travel while you're awake, as Jürgen does. And just like Jürgen, you can hug your mother. You can travel to places you cannot imagine otherwise, and you can know where you're going long before you're ever actually going to permanently get there. Well, permanently until your next lifetime. So astral travel is accessible. It's something we all do naturally, and the only issue is learning to do it and stay awake. Meanwhile, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in your one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.